All right. If you would, open your Bible to Matthew chapter 7. I'm going to start in Matthew chapter 7 this morning. So we're talking about communication within the family, and we're focusing primarily on the husband and the wife, but it applies to other relationships within the family as well. So we were looking at different passages that related to communication, and we are applying them specifically to the family relationship. So Matthew chapter 7 is a verse that we're probably all familiar with. So starting in verse 1, it says, "Judge not that you be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use it, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me remove the speck from your eye,' and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." How does this relate to husband and wife relationship? Well, if you looked at the survey that I sent out, the number one complaint or thing from both husbands and wives is your spouse frequently criticizes you. So the question is, if we're all trying to be really honest with ourselves, is do we judge our spouse the same way we judge ourselves? Are we fair in the way that we judge? Because it's not, Jesus isn't saying you can't ever judge. That's not the point of the verse. The point is hypocritical judgment. So if you're going to measure someone and hold them to a certain standard, the question is, do you hold yourself to that same standard? I think it's interesting, if you look back in chapter 6 in verse 14, Jesus says, "For if you forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses." So are we fair in how we forgive our spouse or how we judge our spouse? Look at James chapter 2 and verse 13. "For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment." So just, is he giving some sort of sarcastic irony in Matthew chapter 7 where he says, remove the plank from your own eye and then judge the speck? Are you going to judge the speck after you remove the plank? Is that going to be something that you're interested in doing? I think not, really. You're not going to be so worried about the speck in your spouse's eye after you've removed whatever the log is from yours. Look over in Luke chapter 6. This is a parallel account. What's interesting here is in starting in verse 37, Jesus is giving this account of judging not. But look in the middle. In the middle of this recitation of judgment, he says in verse 39, "And he spoke a parable to them, 'Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into the ditch? A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone who is perfectly trained will be like his teacher.'" Why did Jesus put this in here in the middle of talking about judgment? Why would he put that in here in the middle of this? I have to believe that he's talking about If someone is displaying this hypocritical judgment, whether it be his spouse or whether it be children, are they not going to see the way that someone judges? And what's going to happen? Not just as husband and wife, what are we teaching our children? We're naive to think that our children don't see how we treat each other. And so are we going to create a cycle where the teacher passes on to the pupil a pattern of hypocritical judgment? That's what they see. They see how mom and dad treat each other. And then it begets this cycle. We talked about that. How you were raised. You are a product of your environment to some extent. No matter how much you, good or bad, you are a product of your environment. And if that's what they see, then is it not an indication from Jesus putting this in the middle of this passage that there is a potential to repeat that type of behavior? And then also notice in verse 38 that he says, you will be for in the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. So we talked a little bit about this, but typically, how do people respond to you? Is it not in the manner that you treat them? So if you treat them with this type of judgment or this type of behavior, what can you expect in return? The same measure that you use, be it good or bad, if you treat them with kindness and if you treat them with mercy, what can you expect to be treated back to you? Look at Proverbs chapter 12. Verse 25, anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. So notice the contrast between line 1 and line 2. Let me ask you a question. How does it affect you when you know your spouse is not happy with you? Does it? Does it matter to you if you know that your spouse is not pleased? I can tell you it bothers me. And I've even told Jennifer that it bothers me. I can't focus on what I'm supposed to be doing if I know she's got something on her mind that's bothering her about me. I've told her that more than once. It's hard for me to do my work. It's hard for me to just have leisure time. Whatever. If I know there's something bothering her, it affects me. Does it affect you? I don't know. Everybody's different. But then what's an example? He says in the second part of this verse, he says, but a good word makes it glad. What is a good word in your opinion?
Something uplifting,
right? So do we display or do we say good words to our spouse? Do we say things like, man, you look really pretty today. The house sure looks nice. Hey, thanks for washing my car. Whatever the love language is, right? Because it's not always vocalized. It may be comments verbally spoken, but we've talked about in previous classes, our language may not always just be verbal. You may do things that your spouse appreciates. Do you do those things? Do you say things that try to be uplifting? Do you say things that try to be positive? Or is most of your language critical? Kelly.
I think too, in that context, what you're talking about, judgment, there has to be true reconciliation. I mean, there is an issue that's happened that has to be dealt with. You have to talk through it. You know, it may take time to do that, and sometimes it will. But just paying compliments on top of that, I don't think it's going to really resolve that. You haven't really gotten to the root of the problem.
No.
I'm not saying you should forego compliments. I'm saying that you can't have a true conflict that needs to be resolved and then say, well, we'll just ignore that.
No, you're right, and that's not, that wasn't the
yeah, no, I'm not saying you're saying that.
No, you're absolutely right. So Matthew chapter 7 is decoupled from Proverbs chapter 2 and Proverbs chapter 12. Yes, there has to be actual resolution when there is a judgment or a problem between the two. In Proverbs chapter 12, I'm simply talking about, it says, anxiety can cause this unease, but a good word makes it glad. And so do we say good words? Are we complimentary of our spouse? Does anybody have things that irritate them about their spouse? I mean, when you live together any sort of amount of time, there's going to be things, right? But the question is, do you focus on that? Are you focusing on the things that bother you? And yes, you're going to have disagreements. You're going to have debates or whatever it may be. But do you constantly uplift or do you constantly criticize? And again, if you look at the survey of men and women who have responded, number one, they frequently criticize me. They frequently criticize me. Is that what your spouse is hearing from you all the time, is criticism? Or do they hear the positive things about you? Look at Proverbs chapter 9. Verse 7, he who corrects a scoffer gets shame for himself, and he who rebukes a wicked man only harms himself. So if your spouse comes to you with some sort of criticism, let's call it constructive criticism. Let's say they come to you in the proper attitude, with the proper spirit. What can they expect to get back from you? What kind of response are they going to get?
Should be thank you.
What kind of response are you going to get from the person in Proverbs 9 and 7? You're not going to get a good response, right? Can they expect that you're going to retaliate, you're going to attack? Are they going to say, yeah, but you? But what about you, and you do this? Are they going to try and turn it around instead of listening to what you're bringing up? Because it says to rebuke a wicked man only harms himself. It's futile, right? You're wasting your breath talking to someone like this that's not going to listen. Is that who you are? No, go ahead, Jim. Right. And I'm, yes. Jennifer.
I was thinking about what you were saying about when you're constantly criticizing. A lot of times people think that they're helping someone. So they constantly critique and they think they're correcting and helping. No one wants to be treated like that. And you do internally take that as criticism. And I think that also works in other relationships too with your children. I think that I'm constantly helping them by correcting them all the time. And it's not. They're just criticism.
I'm sure you're not talking about yourself, Sean.
It does make me wonder, like what Jennifer said, for example, if ultimately this is a blessing given by God and it teaches us something about God, you know, you can't help but wonder if there's always that underlining, is this God? You know, so like you take an abused child or something and you talk about a father figure to them, but they were always criticizing them. But then God, your father's great. And they're going, uh-oh. and so even in these relationships, when you're talking about who God is and he's trying to describe himself, he's like, I'm your husband. And I'm really not trying to blow this out of proportion. I think that's what Paul does in Ephesians 5. He goes, you know, what I'm really talking about here is actually Christ in the church. So he's like, I mean, I'm talking about marriage, but I'm actually talking about a different covenant, a different marriage. And so a lot of this for me, it does reflect, you know, like Jim says, can I just be David and say, I am the man, or I am the man, but.
Right.
You know, and to me, that reflects how I deal with God, perhaps in my own life. I don't know that they're always disconnected.
No, I agree. I definitely think there is a connection. Pam? Right.
And the other thing I thought of it, everything I know is because of my teaching experience, but if you had a child that you needed to tell their parents something that needed to be corrected, then they taught us to do it in a sandwich. Like you say something really good about the child, then you address what needs to be corrected, and then you follow it up with something that's great about the child. So it's like you put the correction in between two good things, and then you're better.
Right, and we want to be sure that if we do approach our spouse or our child or our parent about something that we feel needs correction, that we do so with the proper spirit. And I would venture to guess that most cases where people don't speak to each other for a week, it's because of a pattern of behavior in the past that makes it very unwelcoming to try and approach it. They've tried to talk to this person in the past and it hasn't worked. So what happens is you just build it up over time and you don't speak. And then typically what happens is it blows up. Rick. Right. No, you're absolutely right. So let's look real quick at what our response should be. Look over in Proverbs chapter 12 in verse 1. It says, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. Do you hate reproof? Do you dislike being constructively criticized? Stupid seems like kind of a harsh word, but that's what it says. Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 5. Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. And then one more in Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 23. He who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with the tongue. Would you prefer that your spouse just constantly flatter you falsely instead of helping to build you up or to give you reproof, to criticize you, to make you better? Which do you prefer? We prefer the flattering words, right? We like that. We enjoy the positive reinforcement. But how much do we enjoy this person who should be the closest person to you in the world offering you? They know you better than anybody. Listen, Jennifer knows me better than anybody. And so when she tells me, hey, this is a problem, she's probably right. Or at least there's some measure of truth to it. But how do we receive that? Do we receive that as, I'm so glad that my mate, who knows me better than anyone, is helping to make me a better person? Is that how we receive it? I'm guessing typically that's not our first response. Kelly. Rick. I'll agree. No.
My influence on her. It's a team effort, and
think goodness opposites attract, because they, you know, her, and she's really masterful at it, of giving constructive criticism. There's criticism and there's constructive criticism. She is masterful at making it constructive criticism, and the way she chooses her words. Me, I'm more direct, I'm blunt, and I just become critical. So she's working on me and my choices of words, and I'm working on her as making her more, probably a little bit more logical in the way she approaches certain situations. But together we wind up becoming better people because of it, and we recognize that. That doesn't mean that we're not without issues. We've had our issues. Anybody who's been together for 27, 28 years, whatever it is, they'll have their moments. I remember Hannah at one time thought they had witnessed like one fight with us, and they were young, and so the four kids were deciding who was going to go with which. For the record, they all wanted to go with Deanna. Grant sacrificed himself. Said, okay, I'll go with that. Somebody else. Eventually, no matter how good you are, you can't hold it in. You will hit a tipping point. It will boil over. And then it's like, you can't hold somebody accountable to something that they did 15 years ago if you didn't address it at the moment.
Couple of good excellent points. And yes, I will tell you that I receive criticism much better when it is given to me not emotionally. If someone is in an escalated emotional state and they're coming at me, I am much less likely to receive it well. And then to your point, if you look over in Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 9, he who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates friends. Who should be your best friend? Your spouse. And so the question is, do we repeat a matter? Do we constantly bring something up? Just like Kelly was talking about earlier, there has to be resolution to an issue. So if something happens between you and your spouse, is that going to be, that's my ace in the hole, I'm going to bring that one up when I need it? Or has it truly been resolved? When things just get so heated, that's the, I got my ace right here. Remember this? Remember that one? We going to use that one? Jennifer?
What does that mean to say truly resolved? I'm not sure if I have another example. When you say truly, it doesn't mean you have to be in agreement, right?
No. Saying if you have an issue between the two of you, there has to be true resolution. There has to be some sort of resolution and agreement between the two of you. Even if you don't exactly see it the same way, this matter is resolved. As opposed to it's just kind of hanging out there, and you can just kind of pull that thread. You can kind of pull that thread. Kelly.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. It may not be necessarily that, you know, like my wife and I might look at some event and we may come to different takes on it, right? But we don't part that conversation or shouldn't as enemies, right? And, you know, at the end of the day, if I can hear her and fairly repeat back to her what I think her understanding is without judging that I don't agree with it, but saying, I understand where you're coming from. I may not agree with the conclusion you've reached, right? But I can hear you, you know. But I think what happened.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't necessarily put it in those words because I know that we have finished conversations but not been in agreement. So I wouldn't have thought that's
somebody's gotten angry or lost their temper or said something they shouldn't, then yeah, there should be agreement on that point that that shouldn't have been done. And if that goes unresolved and continuously goes unresolved, to Rick's point, that's going to cause frustration and anger. You know, when you don't see a true humble spirit in trying to say, look, I lost my temper, I said something I shouldn't have said. Even if we don't agree on this issue, I didn't handle it right.
Right.
And that, for me, has caused frustration.
Well,
both me doing it and it happening.
Yeah, the content of the discussion versus and is a separate issue from how we're handling it. Right. And so let me ask you this. Are you better at handling criticism or discussions or whatever these types of issues are better with your friends or your coworkers than you are your spouse? If your boss comes to you and says, hey, I think there's something that you need to work. Here's some things you need to work on. I get a yearly review, right? And so in every yearly review, there are your, you know, what are your key strengths and what are your areas for development is what they call it. They don't say weaknesses. They say areas for development. So how do you handle that versus how do you handle your spouse coming to you with your areas of development?
I was sort of jokingly asked her, who do you use that?
So just being honest, if you have a disagreement with a coworker, are you much more able to keep your temperament? You're able to handle yourself, you can conduct yourself in a professional manner, whereas if your spouse comes to you, game on. Here we go. Sean.
Yeah, growing up, you know, I'm just talking about relationships. I mean, Billy and Dave and I, we went a few rounds. but you know, as time has gone on, like taking out of the marriage relationship, that means something to me because I can meet a stranger and treat them with the utmost kindness. And you know, and a few years ago, if y'all know us, my brothers and I are incredibly close. But I remember, like, I'm not going to talk like that with them because they're my friends. You know. If I can talk to a stranger like that, then certainly I can talk to David like that. But I was giving you the thought too, and I think I heard this maybe behind me, but I do you think that maybe he who repeats a matter separates close friends? Do you think that could maybe even refer to talking about issues to other people?
So when I read this verse, I definitely, you know, we talked about that because there's another proverb that we looked at that we talked about people talking to other people. I think both applications are true, absolutely. Whether which one this verse means, I don't know. But since I had addressed it with the other verse,
yeah.
I was using this verse as an application of repeating.
Well, because, you know, I don't know how y'all are. I don't mind if Jordan were to talk to a friend. But if the context was to actually help to bring us together, not to bash me. I remember this one, I mean, I liked her, but I remember one lady in particular that I used to work with, and I thought, if only her husband knew what she was saying, and I thought, you know what, he probably does. as much as openly and freely she's talking about him like this, and I just thought, their marriage has to be peachy.
Well, and you're right, because we also talked about the difference between repeating a matter or talking to other people versus truly seeking counsel, right? So if our spouse is talking to others in a spirit of humility and not a negative, always speaking negatively of their spouse, I think that's fine. If it's your spirit, right? What's your real goal versus just going out and my spouse is terrible. Listen to all the terrible things they do, Kelly.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Seeking counsel doesn't sound like you're going to
Right.
Am I handling this the right way? Am I crazy?
And I think there's biblical application for that, for seeking counsel, right? I mean, you should be looking for wise counsel, and I think the marriage relationship certainly applies. But again, are you going out and trying to seek wise counsel in the interest of making the relationship better? Or are you simply trying to vent all of the bad things about your spouse?
That need resolution. And I don't know if this is
read the proverb about he who covers a transgression seeks peace. There's a point of patience sometimes where you can't, resolution needs to be there, but it might occur over time, over a long period of
time. Right.
Having that patience to allow your spouse to work with things, allow yourself to work with things. Sometimes there's that emotional aspect that is hard to get packaged and sorted out.
Well, and I would go back to the same question. Are we as patient with our spouse to work through an issue that may take them time as things that we know and identify we need to work on, and we know it's going to take time for that to change to come? Do we give that same grace to our spouse, or do we expect it to happen right now? They need to change this right now. Look at John chapter 21. Starting in verse 21, Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, "But Lord, what about this man?" Jesus said to him, "If I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me." Then this saying went out among the brethren that this disciple would not die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but, "If I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you?" What's going on here? What's going on here? Miscommunication is what's happening here. Complete miscommunication. Could be jealousy, but Peter says, what about this man? Talking about John, talking about the writer of the book. He says, Jesus says, "If I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me." Jesus says, if I decide that John is going to live until I come again, what is that to you? He was trying to make a point. And then what did the apostles turn around and start saying? Well, John's not going to die. Jesus is going to come back before John dies. Is that what Jesus said? No, that's not what he said. They didn't listen to what Jesus said. They misapplied what he said and ran with it. Right. And so there's definitely an element of Peter and jealousy. But then also, have you ever listened to your spouse and walked away and said something completely different? Because did the apostles walk away with the right understanding of what Jesus had just said? Look at Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 3. It's actually 18:13, not 18:3. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. You ever been preparing your answer while your spouse is speaking? I have. While she's telling me what I need to do, I'm coming up with list A, B, C, and D of what you need to do and why you're wrong about what you're saying. I'm not even listening to what she's saying at this point. We're not always good listeners. Look at Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 5. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. And then look over in James chapter 1. Verse 19. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Jim mentioned it last week. We've talked a little bit about it. Let's talk for a minute about the power of listening. The power of listening. Do you listen to your spouse? And I don't mean just hear the words that they're saying. Do you listen to what your spouse has to say? Before you got married, you could communicate. Otherwise, you wouldn't be married. There's a reason that you're with this person. You had to be able to effectively communicate. Is that still the case? You would listen to what your spouse had to say, your boyfriend or girlfriend at the time. When you have a conversation, especially if it's important, because I'm going to try and make myself look a little better here. If it's not super important and you're watching TV and your wife is talking to you. But anyway, if it's an important conversation, are you focusing on what your spouse is saying to you? Or are you looking at your phone while she's talking? Or are you doing something else? You're busy doing... Are you actively listening? You're not doing something else. You're focused on what she's saying or he is saying. This is important. You know, a woman falls in love with a man who sets aside time to exchange conversation and affection. And a man falls in love with a woman who's interested in what he's doing and supports him. And Mike, you completely failed me. We're past time.
So we had perfected listening when we were engaged, and then it dropped the ball once we got married.
Right. I'm just being honest. We're going to pick up right here because I think there's definitely more to talk about in the power of listening. You guys listened so well that I didn't realize it was past the time, so I appreciate it. Thank you.